Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Bearded Pete.
Oh, yes. And before we get into The Stack, where we review comics, I should just mention that I shaved my beard off a couple of weeks ago. Justin, who is constantly following me and following my footsteps,
yes,
also.
I was like, well, I like the way that guy looks. Let me see if I can do it.
Yeah, is now shaved. And Pete, I hear for New Year's Day, you're going to be shaving your beard as well. That's what you promised our listeners, right?
Oh, I heard all body hair completely clean.
You should be
squeaky clean, Pete.
Yeah, you got a, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I believe you got a slip and slide and you wanted to maximum use it, is the phrase
yes,
you
said. That's what he said. He said maximum use it.
Yeah, maximum slide.
You honestly, Alex, you really landed that plane because you found something that Pete would actually like to do. So you made the best case to have him shave. Let me also say, I know it doesn't seem like a big deal when someone just shaves, because it's not. I promise you it will come up a lot because it's a huge deal to beat.
That's right.
It's the biggest deal.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of change that happens in this world. And, you know, sometimes it feels like some things are just unfair and not fun. So, you know, it's hard to get past them.
Well, I'll tell you about one constant that is always fun is comic books. Even though it is yes, Christmas Eve, they are still coming out in stores. Highly recommend you get there early. Don't be the annoying guy who comes in at like 8 as they're closing and is like, hey, I just want to kind of browse for a little bit while they're like, I've got to go home and wrap me presents, you know, or whatever they
yes,
talk like. I honestly
Charles know. Dickens comic book shop.
Yes. But we got a big stack for you, and particularly woo-hoo, big because DC is releasing a ton of titles this week and no titles next week. Marvel, I believe, is kind of evened out, maybe the reverse, but whatever it is, we got a bunch of stuff to talk to you about. So why don't we kick it off with a big one that is Absolute Wonder Woman.
Why don't
number
we let
15.
The person with the most facial hair go first, because that is obviously going to be the thing of importance. You know
what
I mean?
Great point, Pete, except I haven't actually finished talking or introducing this comic book. So okay. Absolute Wonder Woman number 15 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Hayden Sherman. This is the first official crossover between the heroes, at least, in the Absolute Universe. As Wonder Woman heads to Gotham City to solve a mystery with Absolute Batman, and they team up. This is also the first of two parts of a linked but separate crossover where
yes,
then Wonder Woman will be paying it forward by heading over to the next issue of Absolute Batman.
Yes, and she's the going story to pay it, Haley Joel Osment's pay it forward, I believe, specifically.
Right. What happens? He gets stabbed at the end or something? I've never seen
it. Yeah, horrible ending.
Oh, my God.
Awful.
Oh, I should mention spoilers for pay it forward throughout the podcast.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, spoilers
yes,
for mainly but that.
Spoilers
also,
for
yeah, thank you.
Also
yeah,
all of the comics.
All
exactly,
the comics we're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, so that's the setup for this. Pete, take it away.
Okay, fantastic, badass cover. Gets you so excited for the insides. And this is going to be a running theme in this stack, but
I feel the same way about your skin, by the way. It gets me really excited yeah, for your guts.
The cover, your face is the cover.
Right.
And I
don't know why you guys make
and
things creepy. I'm trying to talk about an amazing comic here. And yeah, this is just awesome. It's unbelievable. There's a reason why this comic is so popular. This is just such a great idea. So well executed, but also hits you in the feels. I get a little choked up in this issue. There's going to be numerous times in this stack where we're talking about crying. This is the first one, but man, wow, alive. Also, like, mind-melting reveal that Wonder Woman is a golem. I am still kind of...
New golem from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, she's a golem, not a golem.
Well, it depends on where in the country you are and how you pronounce things.
It does not.
You know what I mean? An accent sometimes, you know what I mean? You say tomato.
Sure, a golem is a little creature that says fruit. You know what I mean? And yeah. Wants rings. A golem is reanimated clay or other material that is made out of Jewish mysticism, which is not what's happening here. But there you go.
Okay.
No, but
yeah, but this I will is say, badass.
I will say I really liked the way this story unfolded. It incorporated. Well, I think what Kelly Thompson did here is like, if I'm going to have Batman in here, I want to have it be like a. I liked that it was a conversation rather than a fight first, and there's a great story reason why the fight occurred. But it was a detective story. Mm-hmm. And I think that was such a masterstroke of like, if I'm going to do a crossover, I'm going to take the whole idea of the Batman character and just infuse the Wonder Woman comic with it. So I really love that. And I loved the nature of this crossover. I thought it was going to be a classic two-parter, but doing it as like you said, Alex, like a linked story where it's like, oh, we did this one thing, now we're going to do this other thing. I that feels loose. It feels better. It's not as demanding as other lines sometimes do in other parts of publishing where it's like, you got to read both. Like there, if this was some sort of Age of Revelation, it's kind of a thing. You know what I'm
just
about.
Throw it out there, sure.
Just to throw out a series of words.
Real quick, Alex, sorry, before you continue, I just wanted to say to little Justin, that's an adorable idea. I think maybe if you grow up in life and get some more wisdom, you might have a different outlook after reading this comic, but I appreciate your little squeaky voice.
You know, Pete, I was going to wait and save this for later, but you know, you said that bearded people get to go first, and you've been this way a long time. You're a facist. You're just happy. You've been putting your facism out there for us all for a long time, and your beard agenda. And I think at this time of year, like it's just I hate to see a facist.
Oh man, well,
do you buy the theory that Santa is facist? Because I do. He's got the whole beard.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's kind of crazy that you guys have been talking about this comic book and you have not brought up the biggest shocker of all the drops in here, which is that Absolute Wonder Woman is larger than Absolute Batman. Like, Flex. Just comparatively, I was like, what is it? Hold on. I was not expecting that. Like, I think on the cover here, you talk about great cover, Pete, but it looks like Absolute Batman is standing on an apple box, Tom Cruise style or something like that. So we can look tall on Absolute
angles.
Wonder Woman on her own comic book cover. It's crazy. Anyway, this is gorgeous as usual from Hayden Sherman. I love seeing their interpretation of Absolute Batman in the Gotham world. I thought it was also fun to throw Absolute Wonder Woman over there and give a little bit of flavor of the Absolute Gotham versus what you might expect, which is Batman stopping by her CD, though that looks like that's going to happen next issue. Great stuff. The Absolute Universe and, in particular, Absolute Wonder Woman just never misses. Next up from Marvel, The Will of Doom, number one, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Kafu. As it says on the cover, the fall of Doom leads to the rise of Armageddon. So this is dealing with the fallout of one world under Doom, specifically that Dr. Doom died and left his last will and testament. It turns out he left everything to Valeria. And one person who's a little pissed about that is Red Hulk. But everybody's pissed at Red Hulk because he left an American flag in Latveria, and the Fantastic Four can't stand that. So a little bit of a conflict evolves. We deal with what to do about all those Doombots that are all still hanging around. And how this all leads to Armageddon or what Armageddon is about, we don't know other than Chip Zdarsky is writing it. But there you go. That's the setup for this one. Justin, what did you think of this?
This was fun. It was sort of I didn't know what to expect. I thought this was going to be much more focused on a Reed Richards story. Mm-hmm. And he was sort of barely in it. He had like an interesting torture scene, essentially, with a Doombot that I thought was cool. But the way this was set up at the end of One World Under Doom was like, oh no, Doom somehow is screwing over Reed Richards even after he's dead. But this is very much just a sort of a Red Hulk Marvel Universe political story. But I do like Red Hulk. I like the way that was one of the bright spots in One World Under Doom was the Red Hulk story. That was, I forget what the title of the book was, but I like that story. He was captured by Doom and was sort of fighting his way out. So I like seeing him as a focus coming out of this, and it seems like he's going to be heavily involved in Latverian things going forward. Valyria, I really like where she is, though it made it feel like Doom's coming back soon already, this issue.
Yeah,
I don't know,
he's
going to
be back by the end of the year. By the end of 2026, they have Avengers Doomsday coming out. There's no way he's off the board.
So that felt a little... I was like, give us a month or two to be like crazy that he died before we start the time bullet recovery situation or whatever.
I don't want to continue to be facist on this podcast, but it weirds me out when General Ross doesn't have a mustache, which is basically
what?
Like his one defining
you can't say that. You clean shaven son of a... You can't say that.
Sure.
See, this
Pete,
is more
what's
facism.
Your take on it? What's your take on it?
Well, you know...
not the
I
comic,
think it,
the mustache. What's your take
no,
on the
No, that's what I'm going to start with,
great.
Is I think that when you're used to somebody having a certain look, you know, whether you're a child or whatever, you know, when it's gone, it is shocking, and it's hard to adjust, and then you have to kind of assess a lot about how you feel about that person. It's a lot to go through, you know what I mean?
You really walked into that,
Alex.
You put
through
you really
others through.
I did.
You know what I mean? So thank you for opening with that. But first off, glorious cover. This cover is so badass and such a cool concept and well-executed. Yeah, I very much enjoyed this. I love how Doom has such a soft spot for his goddaughter, and it's just such an interesting aspect of Doom. So, yeah, that whole kind of like Doom Island thing was fun. I thought this was just a great comic and cool idea. So I was all about it.
Franklin's a real party guy, you know?
Who yeah. is?
Franklin. He loves Franklin. The island.
Yeah. He likes relaxing.
He's really set up,
weird take
he's set
on
up
Franklin.
His comic relief. Yeah.
He's like, well, I'm going to show up for two panels and then I'm gone. There are aspects of this that I liked, but overall I found it very jumbled in a similar way to how I found One World Under Doom jumbled politically. Same thing here. I know I was joking about it before, but like the amount of focus on the American flag and the being like, Ross, you can't put the flag on soil. And then the soldiers being like, oops, I guess we got to leave it there so they know that America wins. And then the Fantastic Four happening upon the flag was just like on a random cliff where I don't think anybody regularly goes. They're like, we can't remove it. We cannot remove the American flag. It's maybe there is something we're doing here, but it feels like this weird patriotism that is infusing Marvel over the course of the year that goes into another title that we're going to talk about, 1776. But they are all in on the 250th anniversary of America next year. So I don't think that's what's going on here, but it definitely feels like strange patriotism, and I'm not quite sure what we're netting out or what we're getting from all this focus on specifically a flag versus the interesting parts of this book were the Fantastic Four story, I thought. Like Fantastic
yeah,
Four.
Yeah, it was a weird kind of like derailment in like we were like distracted by the flag for a little while where it's like there is so much happening in this comic book. Can we just stay focused, please, so we can land this
well,
ship?
Particularly because like the idea of the Fantastic Four through conspiracy theorists being blamed for Doom's death, that does feel very relevant to the current world, and it ties into the characters of the Fantastic Four. Everything with Red Hulk, he's just like kind of even throughout because that's who General Ross is, and just sort of seems there because he is going to be a key figure down the road in Armageddon, it seems like. So I don't know. This is one of those weird in-between books that I feel like has some things going for it. Like you said, the Valyria Doom relationship, but has a little too much going on because it's like, got to wrap up this event to tee up this next event.
Don't forget about that cool cover, too.
Cool cover. I do think this feels to me like it makes a lot more sense in the what's coming, but to read this first feels strange. You know what I mean? Like, in context, this will be like, oh, look, they set the table. But now it's like, what? Why is this important?
Yeah. I guess we will see. Let's move on and talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Battle Nexus, number one from IDW, written by Tom Waltz, art by Asao and Isaac Escorza. This is all the rage right now is multiversal tournaments, and this time it's happening to the Turtles as they are fighting variants of themselves and other characters at the behest of a Universal Conqueror. This particular setup versus DC KO is a little more Mortal Kombat style, but with Turtles. Pete...
What'd yeah, this was awesome. Fun idea. Great kind of reveal. Also, the old school black and white Eastman and Laird Shredder. Oh, it gets you excited every time you
see
it.
Yeah, what's that about? Is he experiencing a nostalgia bath, Pete?
Oh, maybe. You know,
because he's
what
black
mean?
And white.
Yeah, or maybe he's just in shock because a close friend or friends change so much about themselves without even a heads up that he's just kind of frozen in time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that sounds like Shredder.
Yeah. He's just drained of his life source, so he's just
you're, by the way,
black
talking about the last page, which is a reveal of the black and white old school Shredder from the original Eastman and Laird comics. My big question about this, there's plenty of fun to be had here, and it's very, like, jokey, which I was surprised about, but that they take so long and there's so much continuity to set up this tournament when we know what's coming for the cover. And the fun of that last page is then saved for the second issue, you know? So I don't know. We don't need that much setup for universal tournament against multiversal variants. I just feel like get there in the first issue, plunge us into the deep end, not to compare it directly to something else, but like that's what DCKO did. Like there was some text set up, but then they were like, we got to get into the craziness and kill off a bunch of characters now. And I kind of wish this had a little more of the sense of that.
Okay, but I also liked the, you know, the twists and turns that we took along the way to get there, because it was like, you know, those great moments with Rocksteady and Bebop in there, you know, like how do we kind of shorten that, you know? So I think
impossible.
It's impossible. Yeah, impossible. So
can't
maybe
cut anything out of that Rocksteady and Bebop sequence.
Exactly. So, you know, maybe make it longer. You know what I mean? So I just feel like
legitimately, like it should have been the Rocksteady Bebop sequence. And then what is this, like 4 or 5 issues? Don't even get to the tournament until issue 4 or 5, something like that. Like really drag it out.
Yeah,
it was strange.
I mean, what is this, the comic Sleep? You know, really just dragging out this. No,
boo.
But I...
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm just saying...
Pre-roast on a future comic?
I'm just saying that, like, if you like what's happening, I don't mind the fact that it's not happening so quick. You know what I mean? Like, I like the... I know where we're going, but I'm also enjoying the kind of setup and everything that's happening. So I definitely understand what you're saying, but also I kind of... read this, was like, oh, this is so much fun. This kind of new kind of cat ninja character is cool. So yeah, I was enjoying the slow build because I was like, oh, I know we're going to get there. And then kind of the reveal at the end, I was like, oh, this is such a cool shout out to the beginning. So yeah, I was very excited and enjoying the twists and turns.
Well, I just have a question, because there is this extended Rocksteady and Bebop scene that does feel like it doesn't apply to anything, but they introduce themselves and say, it's Bebop and Rocksteady's Shell Breath. I have a question there. And then Rock Bobster, if you're nasty.
Yep.
What is Rock Bobster? Is that their group
like,
name? What's happening?
Rock Lobster, not. You know what I mean?
You think that's a reference to the B-52s?
Yep.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. Great to know. And then so they call them Shell Breath. Why would they have Shell Breath? Because
they want to eat turtle soup. You know what I mean? They want to enjoy a nice turtle soup.
The turtles don't. He's calling them Shell Breath.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Do you think they lick each other's shells maybe?
Oh, do they clean each other like cats?
Yeah, exactly. To get the algae off.
No, that's not a thing.
Are you sure they don't do that?
No, I had a turtle legit as a pet, and you constantly had to clean the algae off of his shell. So you never see algae on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle shells, so that's probably what's going on. They're licking it off of each other.
Probably not. There's almost like they're like shaving each other with their tongues in a way.
Do you know what this comic book is like? This comic book is like...
It's bad enough. You're ruining my life as it... Don't then go and ruin other things. You know what I mean?
This comic book is like if you got a sick new Mortal Kombat game and then you boot it up, you're like, here we go. And first you had to watch a half hour long cutscene before you get to the selection screen. That's basically what it is.
It's not that
choose
bad,
your
asshole.
Conversationalist.
do talk. All right, why don't we move on to talk about Green Arrow number 31 from DC Comics, written by Chris Condon, art by Montos. This is the final issue of the series, wrapping up the run from this great team. And if you haven't been following along the entire time, I just want to say you don't have to have been, because this works as a great one-shot focus on the character of Green Arrow and Chris Condon and Montos's take on him as he talks to a detective that has played throughout this run, and we get a surprising revelation about her past. We actually talked to Chris Condon about this a little bit a couple of weeks back on the podcast, so you can give that a listen. But I thought this was phenomenal. Like, Pete, I'm curious if this is one of the issues that made you cry.
Yeah, I'm not crying. You're crying. What's crazy is I already cried at this comic and reread it again and still cried. This is just such a touching
double cry
special send off here. Yeah, I'm still mad at Green Arrow, but this was really, really well done, and art is fantastic. But yeah.
Yeah, I would just echo what Alex is saying. Like, if you haven't been reading this, this is just a great issue to pick up if you like a one-and-done story that is about being a hero. It's about the effect we have on each other by living in a society. It's awesome.
Yeah, so you basically, this is the opposite of what you did to me. You guys, like, took my flashlight. You took away my light.
Took away your fleshlight? What did you say?
Yeah, you really got to stop using that. You're getting
stop
raw,
using
baby.
That. We did that to help you. But anyway, well, let me get back to talking about this comic, and you can pull that part out of the quote that will be on the trade of this, if possible. But I love the comic Starman. This reminds me of those that type of storytelling where it's a city. It's the hero's part of the city, and it's about the sort of the impact on the people of the city. You get to see it from that side here. Great issue. Definitely, I think this is my favorite of the week in a very strong stack.
Yeah.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, let's see how this holds up. Marvel Winter Break Special, number one from Marvel, written by Tim Seeley and Tony Fleece, art by Nick Bradshaw et al. This is a sequel to the swimsuit special that Marvel released over the summer, and it's the same sort of conceit where we get a framing story from Tim Seeley and Tony Fleece that, like, kind of tease up what's going on, but mostly it's an excuse to have a bunch of pinups of the characters in swimsuits in the snow this time. I was pretty critical about the first one, so I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
Well, I'm curious
about
how you like, if you like this, because I love the tone of these. They're taking a concept that was, it used to be just pinups, and Tim Seeley and Tony Fleece are bringing some, like, genuine comedy to this. There's a part of the premises that they're in. There's an environmental change happening to the Savage Land. It's getting snowed in, and they bring a bunch of clothes to wear, and then they get shredded by some dinosaurs from Savage Land. Very fun, and then that's what they're wearing in all the pinups. That's a great comedy forward story, and then excellent art. Do you have a favorite pinup, guys?
Well, just to respond to what you said at the beginning, I like this one better than the first one. I think both times I liked the story. I thought it was silly and cheeky in the right way because Tim and Tony know how to hit that tone properly. But this one, the pinups overall were better. Nothing against the art in the first one, but my criticism was that they weren't horny enough in the first one. This one, I think
that's your criticism of a lot.
Yeah, it was the same thing for, I don't want to ruin it, but Sleep as well. We'll get there. Anyway, I think for the most part, they hit the right tone of those old school pinups from the swimsuit special a lot better here. The art was more ridiculous. Like, you want to look at it and be like, yes, that's sexy, but it's also ridiculous. That should be, that's sort of the sweet spot for this kind of thing. And they hit it better in this special. There's some fun stuff in the story with Gwenpool and Deadpool as well that I enjoyed. So I had a good time.
Yeah, this is just, you know, it's in great hands. You know what I mean? Tony Fleece and Fleece and Tim Seals. Yeah, this is just great, funny, well-executed ideas. And to answer your question, JT says, my favorite one is the panel of Ghost Rider on the dinosaur.
How is that your favorite?
That's not like, the sexiest one.
He's completely dressed. Even like the mammoth is like, oh, I'm wearing a sweater. I'm cold in that one. I would say the one that I think nailed the tone correctly, and this isn't too much of a surprise, is Kare Andrews.
That's going to be my fold pick. Out.
Which is absolutely like, it's, I think, is it Boom Boom?
I think it's Dazzler.
Dazzler in a swimsuit, and then there's like Rogue and somebody else are outside freezing, looking in.
Where Rogue, I think Psylocke and a dinosaur are trying to get into the cabin.
Yes, and it's exactly like Kare Andrews already has that 90s style to his art, but then having it as the double page Sports Illustrated style fold out, having the humor in the background, I thought that one just nailed it.
Yeah, Sports also Illustrated like fold out. Okay.
Spidey and Black Cat, and gotta give a shout out to the Dokken snowboarding one.
You don't.
great pinup.
Nope.
Void Rivals, number 25 from Skybound at Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Andre Bresson. This issue kicks off the Quintesson War, which is one of the big alien races for the Transformers universe. They are attacking our Void Rivals. Can they stop them and their gigantic screwdriver? We'll find out next issue.
Oh, come on, dude. That spaceship is taken straight from Transformers, the animated movie, man. I mean, this is just, come on, dude. Stop making fun of something that is so cool.
Hold on a second. I just have a question. I'm smart, right?
Okay.
Like, decent.
Well, you used to but you don't look it anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, a beard gives off a little bit more of a knowledge.
I'm like a young Doogie Howser type, a smart, young, promising man.
Sure.
What is happening in this comic? I've read every issue of this comic. I'm like, who are these people? Three quarters of the issue is like strangers fighting. And the only character I know and like is Handroid, and there are even two of them.
That's right. Shout out to
there are two of them that are the same, basically?
Yeah, man. You know, robots are similar. You know,
yeah, so there was the red Handroid that Guy Void Rival, and by the way, neither of these characters are actually named Void Rivals. Red Handroid let the lady Void Rival borrow it for a while, and then he took the red Handroid back and gave her a new Handroid. So she has her new Handroid. She's trapped under the surface of Void Rival's world by some god called Zerda, I believe. Meanwhile, he's on the surface, and the Quintessons, who are this octopus race that you see on the cover, but do not see in the comic book at all, attacking Void Rival's world because they see an opportunity now that they didn't let Large Transformer through Black Hole. I'm forgetting all the names of that. But the big criticism I have of this issue is no Skuxoid, so bad issue.
Oh, wow. Fun take. Shout out to the best letters page in the business. Talk to the Handroids. Come on, man. This is just
How about
fun.
The rest of the letters page, like beyond the title? Do you read it?
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Do
it's
you
good.
Read it?
Yeah. If you get a catchy title, I'm in. You know what I mean? You had me at Talk to the Handroids, so I'm going to support it. But yeah, this is just, you know, amazing art, fun action, and, you know, I'm still enjoying my nostalgia bath with this.
Fair enough. You remember Void Rivals when you were a kid, and now you love it as an adult. Okay. Absolute Martian Manhunter, number 7 from DC Comics, written by Dennis Camp, art by Javier Rodriguez. This book has been on hiatus for a little while, but it is back, dealing with the fallout of the White Martians' attack over the course of the previous 6 issues. Now John Jones and his Martian co-pilot, I guess they're sort of still figuring out exactly what they are and whether either one of them exists.
sort of his android in a lot of ways.
Yeah, his android. Are dealing with the fact that the White Martian is probably still out there somewhere. We, the readers, know that the White Martian has gone inside John Jones's child, but they don't know that as of yet. As usual, one of the most gorgeous comic books on the stand that I really hate to read digitally because, again, this has a bunch of those see-through pages and doesn't work in the PDF form. What a bummer.
Yeah.
Nothing about DC. That's literally just me being bothered. That's just have to pick problem. It up in shops. Yeah.
Just to get this out of the way, it's worth it for the art alone. This is just such a tripped out, amazing, artistic, forward comic that, you know, at the end of it, I question my reality. You know what I mean? Like, am I real or am I just in Zelvin's brain, you know?
No, I would not imagine you.
It's the latter. I did not imagine you. That's what you would say.
Yeah.
That's what God would say to his imaginary man. And I, honestly, Alex, I'm curious why you imagined Pete specifically.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe it's like, maybe Pete's the devil on my shoulder and Justin, you're the devil on my other shoulder.
Ooh. Yes, exactly. And you're making all the right decisions.
Yes. By the way, I just pictured both of you as Donald Duck as a devil, just to be like 100% clear.
As long as I still had my beard, that's all that matters.
The beard on the bill? Duck bill beard?
Around the, you know.
No, nice. Great. This comic is excellent. I feel like the tone has changed a little bit in kicking off this new arc.
Yeah.
Before it was very like questioning internal reality, and now it's extending out a little bit, and it's like getting into the mundane life and the dread that's sort of starting to bubble up around all of us, really, but our main character here, and that's cool. To keep the arc consistent but change the direction of the energy of the story is really. Really nice change.
I think it's an interesting kind of thing, and I'm glad that you've picked up on it. It's this, you know, because his life has changed, he's no longer with his lady and all this kind of different stuff. Like, everything's a little bit off and more askew. And just, like, the fact that he's so out of it and in his own little world and missing all these kinds of things, like the stuff with the people happening around them, was such a cool idea. And I love the kind of layers to this comic. It's really impressive what it's doing.
1776, number two from Marvel, written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Sean Damian Hill. A bunch of Marvel heroes have traveled back in time to, just to be clear, 1777, to prevent a disaster that may destroy America forever. They have a magic spell that makes them look, most of the time, unless they decide they don't want to, like people of the time period. And in this issue, Tony Stark meets Ben Franklin, among other things. What'd you guys think?
Oh, interesting. Passing the buck from Mr. Zalbin here.
Sure. I know I mentioned this with Will of Doom, but this is the same sort of thing where I'm like, why are we doing this? What's happening here? What's happening with this story? This one, I thought there were some interesting things in the first issue, particularly when they were poking holes in the whole premise of America, which was very surprising.
Agreed.
And interesting. And that kind of goes away in this issue where it's mostly about like, they're out of costume, then they're in costume, then they're out of costume, and a lot of back and forth and a lot of characters ending with Clea going up against Morgan Le Fay, which is something that could happen anywhere bereft of the American Revolution. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
My takeaway, this was some, like, boomer shit right here.
Snapper.
This is, Pete, you're who I'm talking to here. This is, like, you know what's cool? American history. I'm going to inject it in here. And there's a lot of just random history that's included for maybe no reason, I guess. No story reason. And the idea that Ben Franklin can say, I know you're a time traveler. I was like, get out of here with that. That's crazy.
Well, yeah, it's weird to see B. Franks chilling with Iron Man. And it's also just kind of like just the change in language alone, if someone was, you know, at least somewhat smart, it would just kind of make somebody be like, you don't talk like this time period at all. So I, part of me was like glad that they kind of, you know, acknowledged the fact that someone should be able to pick up on just the, you know, that stuff. So, but yeah, this is so weird. And I'm like, I agree with the Zalbatron where I was like, why is this happening? Why are we... did someone in the office, you'd be like, you know what's great? Superheroes. You know where the first superheroes were? Oh, the founders. Let's bring them together. Because this is so far not.
They're like the original Avengers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Why don't we move on and talk about Sleep Number 7 from Image Comics by Xander Cannon. If you haven't been reading this series, I'll spoil a little bit of our best comics of the year. This was on our list of best comics, and it focuses on a guy who every time he goes to sleep turns into something, some sort of monster. We don't exactly know what it is, but he leaves a trail of destruction in his wake. The surprise ending of the previous issue was that he was captured by seemingly some sort of government agency that wants to test him and see what makes him work. And that's exactly what we get in this issue as they force him to go to sleep, turning into this monster over and over and over again. I continue to absolutely love this series. Not only is it artistically unlike anything else on the stands, it also shakes up the format dramatically in this issue, particularly as we're heading towards the end of things. I think that's the way you got to do it. You have a little bit of a format shaker so it doesn't feel repetitive and rhythmic. And it's really scary and upsetting what is happening to this guy. You're riding along with him as everything happens, and it's utterly fantastic. Justin, what about you?
Yeah, no, I also love this. I like the format shakeup. Pete was calling out earlier that he feels like they're not telling us what's actually happening here, but I actually thought this issue did reveal a lot of stuff, just not the big reveal. Clearly saving that in a monster at the end of the story style reveal for those of you.
Ooh, do you think he's going to be Grover? Is that what's happening?
It's going to be Grover.
Spoilers for monster at the end of this book.
Huge. I mean, that whole book is about a spoiler, Alex. You just did it.
I'm sorry.
I thought we were the monster at the end of the book.
Whoa. Ooh, interesting. Wow, two different takes. Hot takes. Call up Sesame
Is your last Street. Page a mirror? Is that? Yeah. Oh, huh. Interesting.
Wow. But
Quiver yelling, fuck you, Pete.
Yeah.
Get out of Sesame Street.
Don't call me a monster. Yeah.
Wow. But this is about a monster, I think, is what we're going to find out next issue. And I thought this issue just, the art was great. The way that time was showing to have passed for our main character who's locked up, I thought was great. Scary, but also continuing this great spare storytelling style.
Okay, so we've had, this is the seventh issue, and in the last issue, I was having a blast. I was like, this is so cool. It's so artistic. I don't even need to know. But when we kind of got, we didn't get the red colors. We were just kind of stuck in this blue and white kind of tone room. I was like, man, I need something. I need something. And they gave us a little bit in this issue when they were like, yeah, it's you, bro. You're turning into it. Because before we didn't know if it was him or not. It could have been anybody in town. Now we know it's him. He's the one doing the killing. And the way we kind of saw the girl and then the really upset police chief, like those were really great. But when they kind of had the change of the, instead of we only see one sleep, we saw a bunch, but he was kind of stuck in this room. It was heartbreaking and hard. And I was like, man, I really need something more. I don't know how many more issues I can go without knowing at this point.
One.
Because
there's one after this.
Do you think you can last one more?
I would have liked something a little bit more because at the end of this, I think we got a lot of this. But man, the kind of last couple of panels, I was like, okay. So I'm almost, but man, this is crazy. I'm just hoping the landing is worth it because, I'm a little worried, but man, it's walking a thin line, but, if they do it, it'll be great. But if not, I'm a little worried. So I'm starting to,
do you feel like this book is aspirational at all? Because I read this and I'm like, man, I would love to sleep that much. And like get to sleep that easily. That sounds
but
great.
If you murdered people in your sleep, would you really be looking at it like that?
As long as I'm not tired. I hate being tired.
I wake up every day and I'm like, what did I do? Please tell me, what did I do?
Yeah.
So I get it.
There you go.
This is like looking in the mirror in a lot of ways.
So you're
Trinity,
the monster.
Daughter of Wonder Woman, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Belen Ortega. This is the final issue of this series that has been following three different versions of Trinity throughout time as they try to recapture Super Corgis and also their relationship with their dad, Steve Rogers, which is what this issue squarely focuses on. Pete, I'm going to guess this is another issue you cried at. Am I right?
You are correct, sir. Yes.
Wow. Another three for three, Alex, on the cry scale here for Pete.
This is, sweet kind of dad moments here. Very touching stuff. But I'm very excited. If they can bring Steve back, I mean, that's an awesome promise at the end of this comic. So I'm very excited for that. I think that'd be great for Wonder Woman. So we will see. But, man, very touching. Love the art, love the lightness that the art brings to this comic. This is such a fun surprise for me. At first, when I saw this comic, I was like, all right. But yeah, it really just won me over with each issue. It's impressive.
Well, and like we were talking about with Martian Manhunter changing the tone, I think this book does the same thing. The whole series has been pretty lighthearted and focusing on like being a kid in a superhero world. And this has that moment of a kid like facing the death of a parent, trying to take as much time as they can. Like it really just like walked us right into this heavy emotional topic. And then I thought did a great job of revealing to Steve and then Steve telling his daughter all these things. I like this. I love the story of how Trinity was made, which I thought was told really well here. It was just an excellent surprise issue for me.
I thought this was really lovely as well, and I like how it recontextualizes certain moments from Tom King and Daniel Sampere's run on Wonder Woman as well. I also thought they brought it together very nicely. There's a moment to the end with Steve Rogers and another character we've seen throughout the series that I thought worked really nicely. And like Pete's saying, there's a good tease for what's going forward. The only little sticking point I have with this is I feel like we strangely lost track of the three Trinities a little bit in turning focus to Steve instead, which I was emotionally affected. I like Steve. I'm excited to see him back because clearly they are bringing him back. But this is not Steve, the story of Steve. Aww, it is Trinity, daughter of Wonder Woman. And
Steve, boyfriend of Wonder Woman?
Yeah, exactly.
Coming soon.
So I don't know. I think we could have had more of a focus on her and what makes her tick at the end here versus another character.
Man. A nice father-daughter moment? You can't
it's
be
okay,
okay
for him
with,
to think that, Pete.
You can't.
Yeah,
because I hear you. When they popped up at the end of the issue, I was like, right, those guys.
Yep. Yeah, there you go. All right. The Amazing Spider-Man, number 18 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by John Romita Jr. We are turning our focus back to Earth, where Norman Osborn got the snot beaten out of him. Somebody is hunting down other goblins. And in this issue, he has a big conversation with none other than J. Jonah Jameson. Meanwhile, some other things are going on with other members of Spider-Man's cast, including his retconned best friend, who probably to the surprise of nobody has a terrible thing happen to him and maybe is going to turn out to be some sort of new villain. I guess we'll see. But this is another one that was one of our top 15 comics of the year. Justin, what did you like about this issue or not?
I mean, I just love this book. And I would say, even the Green Goblin being a good guy thing is always hard. Norman Osborn is a bad guy. And even so, it's hard to swallow. There's another issue later in the stack with another similar character who's like, I'm sort of good now. And so it's hard to swallow that. But I thought this was a great conversation that he and J. Jonah Jameson have, very much like putting everything they feel out on the table. They know each other. And just a great, what I think that, and why this was on the top of our best of list, is that Joe Kelly's just like, looking at all the elements that make up Spider-Man, turning them over, seeing why and how they connect together in different ways, and it just really works. The other thing I would say is if you're a friend of Peter Parker, stay out of the lab. Stay out of the lab because it's dangerous. There's stuff happening in labs that is going to make you
strange. You can just say that in general. Stay out of labs. You know what I mean? You don't have to.
Well, for our chemists and biologists out there, that's their job. They have to go in the lab.
I don't believe in science. Stay out of labs.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Joe Kelly is a great writer.
That really threw Pete.
This
Pete
is really frustrated great, with Alex. Great, great art. I guess this continues to be good.
Wow. Pete Whoa. Begrudgingly enjoying.
Interesting. All right, why don't we move on and talk about one I'm sure also made Pete cry, but for different reasons. Event Horizon Dark Descent, number 4, from IDW, written by Christian Ward, art by Tristan Jones. The Event Horizon is under siege from a demonic entity called Paimon. This takes place before the events of the movie, and here we get to see exactly what happened to the previous crew and the message they sent to tell people to keep away. And I'll tell you, as usual with the series, everything was absolutely disgusting and horrifying right to the end. And I was like, whew, what a series. That was a real descent into horror. Absolutely awful, but they did a great job. Excited to read. They just announced they're going to be doing a sequel series later on next year. And then I got to the end and I was like, there's another issue?
More to come.
How is there another issue of this after this? They wrapped it up so horribly, but nicely.
There's more long, bloody flesh pieces that have to come out of someone's mouth and touch someone's face or whatever.
Oh, this is a nightmare. This is a nightmare to read, and I say that complimentarily.
Yeah,
this was a big... This whole stack is a lot of eyeballs coming out of heads.
Yeah.
And yeah. This issue is one of the main contributors to the eyeball exodus that's happening in this week's stack. This is, though, a very intense horror. It's hard to tell exactly what's happening for a lot of it, but you just know it's bad.
Yeah, this is too fucked up for me to read. I can't.
Did you stop?
Yeah, I it was just too gross, too fucked up, and too dark for me.
Here's the thing. This is going to happen to you someday, Pete. You've got to be prepared. So I want you to read this like it's an instruction manual. Study it, internalize it. Think about it.
Learn a lesson.
Yeah. All right. Absolute Superman number 14 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Rafa Sandoval. This is the end of the Battle of Kansas, Battle of Smallville, excuse me, storyline, as Ra's al Ghul and his Lazarus minions are attacking the small town of Smallville. He's got the upper hand on Superman, and all he wants is Superman to be the son of the demon, but Superman's never going to do that, leading to some big status quo changes for everybody at the end here. What'd you guys think about this?
This book is the under-celebrated of the initial Absolute launch, but this is the most absolute of the three main Absolute books. This is the most, like, darker, harder-edged take on the character that's featured, that reinvents the main characters and supporting characters in the Superman story, but still comes at what we expect. Like, there's Jason Aaron just does a great job of finding his way through that to land in the place where it's like, yes, Lois and Jimmy are reporters reporting from the war zone. Ma Kent is getting Superman his she is sewing his uniform, even though he's had this like techno-organic uniform and cape. It's really smart. We land right where we expect in a surprising way. And the part that got me is like, this is a very emotional story. It was really upsetting when his sidekick Ro, I believe is the name, like died essentially here, and that was really upsetting. And it's just like his AI cape, and I was like, I'm crying for that cape.
Yeah, this was the last of the crier issues. This was when Superman's crying, I'm crying. I don't know what it is, but if he cries, I cry. Unbelievable. I mean, I really disagree with what Justin said about this being like the most absolute of all the absolute books. I appreciate you trying to compliment how great that is, and that's where I'm going to focus.
I'm only saying that just to explain further. The other books are great, obviously, but they're doing something different. They're telling new stories that are these characters, but it's going off in a different direction. Well, this feels specifically paying off the premise of the Absolute books, which was an Omega-infused Earth would make different heroes, and here's these darker, real darker tinged versions of the characters that
you don't think Absolute Batman is a darker tinge of fucking Batman? I mean,
but it's also wildly different. It's doing its own Scott Snyder thing, and it's going way over there, while this is doing what I think the event was originally started by. And this is not a criticism of anything. If anything, a compliment to this book.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to focus on. So yeah, this was great art, great action, great comic.
Great. Final Boss, number two from Image Comics, written by Tyler Kirkham, art by Tyler Kirkham with David Miller. This is about a big honking guy who, every time he fights people, he gains more energy, so he's going to fight more people. There you go. That's the premise. I feel like we're very complimentary of the first issue because it was so brutal and disgusting. To be honest, I thought we kind of lost a lot of that in the second issue as it was laying down some more of the plot rather than focusing on the tournament, like we, as I mentioned, is everybody's favorite thing these days. So I could have used a little bit more of that personally.
The eyeballs that come out of people's heads in this comic is crazy. They come out at different velocities, different people. Some of them, they sort of droop out. One of them, the guy gets punched, the eyeballs come shooting out like two other bullets.
Yep.
That would have gone into someone else's face and hurting their eyes. Mm-hmm. Pete, as a facist, did you have any things you want to get off your chest about this?
Well, no, young Justin. But I do think that... this is crazy, gross, over-the-top action, and, you know, I like a snowflake, each individual would have a different kind of eye projectile, you know what I mean? So it really depends on how you hit somebody, and where you hit them, and all those kinds of things. So not everybody has the same eye eject. So, but all that said, this is, I agree with the Zelbatron, this is kind of... fun, over-the-top action, but I do think we were missing a little something from the first issue, but I'm still enjoying it.
The Flash, number 28 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid and Christopher Cantwell, art by Vasco Georgiev. This is part of All Fight Month, as we get mano-a-mano battles from two characters who are currently in the tournament, and some of these titles... have some outside ongoing stories going as well. But I do want to offer an apology first. Last week on the stack, I said it's crazy that they don't have the numbering on the front of the issues. They actually do. It's just, if you're listening to this, you're not going to know this. If you're watching this on YouTube, we have a little banner on the bottom. The banner was covering the round numbers on the cover. So I didn't see them. So that's on me, and I'm sorry. They were doing that. They did put the numbers on there. This is round six. Funny. That said, there was also a lot of discussion in our Patreon Discord about whether they should be round six or match six, because there's actually three rounds of the matches. But anyway, there you go.
What'd you guys think about this? Match would make more sense.
I agree. But match six, I don't know, round six. Sounds weird. Yeah, it sounds weird. Exactly. The important thing is how things sound. Anyway, we got Old Flash versus middle-aged Green Lantern, and also some other things are happening. What'd you guys think about this one?
Great use of the multiple forms of Guy Gardner in this, I thought. That was cool. And a lot of, and the same with Jay Garrick. Like, it is strange, and we've said this, that he's the only Flash in the tournament. But I do like what's, we're keeping the other storyline going. We have Impulse Point is what's happening, which is, that's a fun thing. And they were able to weave that into this issue, which is not easy to do, as well as weaving the ongoing Booster Gold story that's running through all of these. The format allows them to actually find new ways in each of these All Fight issues to tell a different story. And I think that that's a smart format that they've chosen here.
Yeah, this is fun. I was surprised by what goes down, but I was also happy by the blessing that is given. So that's cool. I'm still having a blast with this KO, rounds or matches or whatever you want to call them. So, I think this continues with that.
I was a little critical of Titans last week for trying to balance the ongoing story with the fight that was happening. I think this issue did a much better job of balancing all of that, like you were saying, Justin. And yeah, the rounds were fun. I think the impulse point stuff that's going on with Bart and is it Wally? I think it's Wally, fun as well. So good stuff. I'm enjoying it. Next up, Return to Sleepy Hollow, number two from IDW, written by Casey Gilley, art by Savannah Meyer. This is the official sequel to the Tim Burton movie. We talked to Savannah Meyer about their art back at New York Comic Con. You can listen to the interview there. But as with the first issue, I think the real standout is their art on this issue, which is just absolutely gorgeous. The story is good as well, as Ichabod and company investigate a new supernatural mystery that is very creepy. But man, Savannah Meyer's art, their art is just gorgeous throughout this book.
Yeah, it really takes it to the next level and matches the old-fashioned horror tone, even though it's not really Victorian, but it has a little bit of that look to it, which I think it works nicely here. The and I also like the way the story is unfolding, where it's about like these people who are murdered and their spirits talking through people who don't really want to hear from ghosts, but they're like, they're talking to us. And we're seeing all those elements come together with the actual more like boots on the ground detective work. And I like that they're letting them come together without sort of forcing it.
Yeah, tripped out art, sometimes gross, but does such a great job of setting the tone for this comic. It's really impressive. Also, some really cool panels I've never seen, like the over the railing panel, where you kind of got like three people talking on different levels, but in the same panel. Very cool. Yeah, and then the doodle line was so creepy and fun. So, yeah, this is, I think you're doing a great job of taking Sleepy Hollow and kind of bringing something familiar but new and cool.
Yep. Superman number 33 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Hayden Sherman. This is another All Fight Month book pitting Lex Luthor versus the Demon. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Superboy Prime and Lois Lane, along with Superman Robot, are trying to get several key pieces of information to, as it turns out, different people who are involved in the DC KO tournament or otherwise. As always, incredible Hayden Sherman art throughout here. Yeah. Just the absolute best. Though, one thing that was a little weird to me about this is the choice to make the KOs lettering versus part of the art like everybody else is doing, which was very surprising to me. It almost seemed like that was added in post because that was a thing versus what Hayden Sherman was doing, because you'd expect them to incorporate it in the art like the other one shots have been doing, but we didn't see it here. I don't know. I know that's like a very specific comment, but it just kept popping out to me that it was like this very localized black KO, which we don't see in the other books.
It did feel like maybe it wasn't included in the art because of, for whatever reason, maybe a choice, maybe an oversight or something. And honestly, Hayden Sherman's art is much more superhero-y here than in a lot of the other work that I think we've seen from them lately. So that's interesting. I will say I thought the Demon talked too much. Anybody? Wow. Too much rhyming.
Yeah, I did like the part at the end where the Demon was like, I don't want to, I'm going to choose a form that doesn't rhyme because that sucks. And I was like, I agree.
Yeah, so that was nice. But come on, guys, let's talk about the real, the mother box to the face. He boom tubed his head off. That was unbelievable. Stood up out of my seat. That was the coolest thing I've ever seen. The boom tubing somebody's head. He decapitated him with a boom tube. That was unbelievable. Oh, my God. That was so badass. This is so much fun. This is so cool. This is exactly what I wanted out of this. And it's just like Lex Luthor, like being evil and like badass as fuck. Like, this is cool. This was a blast. It broke my heart, though, because, the Demon is one of my favorite characters, but this was also, like, so cool.
I like the way that Lex won in the end. It is hard. I mentioned rooting for Norman Osborn, and you're sort of rooting for Lex here, yeah. I guess. Like, the story wants you to root for Lex, even though, like, really, Demon is the hero here to you want to win. So it's strange that we just ride with Lex throughout this. I like what's happening with the other, with Superboy Prime and the rest doing their own thing. More fights. More fights.
Yeah.
More fights, more tights. Great issue. American Caper, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Dan Houser and Laszlo, art by David Lapham. This is following a number of different tracks where regular suburban people are getting sucked into crime. Some of them are not so regular. Some of them are weirdos. I think we're pretty complimentary about the first issue, but this one spirals into absolute insanity, I would say. How did you guys feel about it?
I just had a moment because I was looking at my notes, and then I looked up and saw the truck nuts, and I was like, oh, and I remember the part where I was like, this guy was like really talked about his balls a lot. So then reading that in my notes and then looking up and seeing the truck nuts.
Nuts notes?
Yeah.
I think those are just nuts, Pete. Those are regular nuts.
The notes? Or are you talking about truck? No. Look, those are truck nuts up there, bro. You see the little hole up in the top?
I guess, but that's not how truck nuts attach, I don't think.
Yeah. I think
how many pairs of truck nuts do you have?
I don't have a truck, so I don't have any truck nuts. You know what I mean?
Okay,
you
but your car is like covered in truck nuts, right?
Do you have covered? I'm all over the front, the side, the door handles.
There he is, truck nuts.
I use them as bumpers. You know what I mean? I can't afford a bumper, so I just get truck nuts. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, is that one of those things where like you got one truck nuts and people are like, "Oh, he likes truck nuts," and suddenly they're just gifting you truck nuts?
Yeah,
and
then
I got to put it on.
Here's the last gift
with Jeeps, you know, and the Ducks, but with truck nuts. You know what I mean?
Here's the last give you gift someone that has truck nuts. Another set of truck nuts. You should know that hole is filled. You do not need to gift that person another set. You don't swap them out. Just like regular nuts, you have the one pair.
Well, I mean, if your one pair of truck nuts is getting banged up, you know, you might need a new pair if they're dragging on the ground for so long. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Do they drag on the ground?
They don't age like regular nuts.
Oh, yeah. I have these metal truck nuts that drag on the ground and create sparks everywhere. Super safe.
That's how I know Alex is coming down the street. I see the sparks.
Yeah, spark nuts. They call them spark nuts.
That's spark notes releases spark nuts.
Spark notes branded spark nuts. For the truck nuts user who needs a second pair. Grow a pair. He's talking about truck nuts.
Truck nuts aside. Crazy cool
now
art.
Let's talk about the shovel on the cover for our time.
I was going to say the American flag donut, but all right. This is like kind of gross on purpose. You can't read this on the train, just a heads up. But it's an interesting idea and well executed, but a lot of fucked up shit happens.
I really like David Lapham's art in this, sort of grotesque, regular American stuff happening here. There is so much going on in this issue, and it's hard to sort of keep your arms around it. Until the second half, we get some, like, fun full-page, like, ads for the places the characters are. Those are really fun. I love the idea. We have this very wholesome religious man that has one beer and goes hog wild. On a trip, and then he is blackmailed into becoming a killer. I was like, that's a whole story. Yet that's only like four pages of this otherwise massive story. So there's a lot of elements here. I just feel like they're a little bit, it's a little too much all at once, I feel like, throughout this. But I'm definitely going to take away some of the ideas from this in a big way.
Next up, we got DC KO Red Hood versus the Joker, number one from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder and Joshua Williamson, art by Dustin Nguyen and Giuseppe Camuncoli. You guessed it, this is another all Fight Month book, and I'd say, I mean, they left the most anticipated one for last. It goes in exactly the directions you might expect, with them pulling out all the crowbars, going back to the time when Jason Todd died, and then beyond that as well. I really think this delivered, and it delivered in a way where you got a maybe not so surprising winner at the end, but a winner in a way where it was still heroically satisfying for Red Hood. And I really like the art, of course, throughout here as well. So good one shot.
Yeah, this is awesome. I mean, this was such a cool fucking rematch. I was on the edge of my seat, so happy with, like, Red Hood's revenge. This is just, I was like, this is such a great reason to have this event. This is such a cool part of this event. I'm surprised this wasn't higher in the list. This was so much fun, but amazing art, amazing action.
What is your thing with the order? Things have to be somewhere, right? Like, everything could be number one all at the same time.
Well, but also, this had to come third in the progression. This is such a blast of a
comic that I was just like, man, what's this doing down here? But it's
right. Justin just explained it. It's the third all Fight Month book in the stack, and we spaced them out. We don't need to talk about this.
We don't need to talk about this. Yeah.
Yeah. So why bring it up? I guess.
I guess that's a good point. You're the one who dug into it. I was just saying that it's awesome. It's so great.
Another all-fight episode of Comic Book Club.
Yeah.
I agree, this is excellent. I like the twisted end that happens. I thought that was nice. We got to really ride the Red Hood psychology, I thought, through this in a way that was good. Didn't need to get behind Joker's eyeballs in this because he's just the monster at the beginning of the story that we get here. So, good stuff.
And before we move on, this is the end of the All Fight Month titles, which means we're at another round in the bracket. So if it's okay with you guys, I think we should check in with our brackets again.
See how we're doing. Yes. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. The only problem is I'm going to have to remember whose is first and whose is last, because here, I'll bring it up so it's a little easier for us to see. Okay, I think maybe...
I think this is me.
I think it went Pete, Justin, me. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I had Wonder Woman winning. Yeah. So this is mine, I think.
I think I did too.
Oh, you did?
This is yours, though, because you had Damian winning it, getting that far, I think.
Okay. Well, this is super tiny for me. So let me see if I can make this a little larger so I can see what's going on here with me old eyes. Okay, so Pete, we're saying this is yours, yep. I guess. All right, so we had Superman. We're now down to the final four, right?
Is it not?
No, we're final eight.
Yeah,
yeah,
with final eight, elite eight. Okay, so you had Superman taking on Captain Atom with Superman winning, correct? Then Firestorm versus Cheetah, that did not happen, but you had Firestorm winning. Aquaman versus Hawkman, that did happen with Aquaman winning, so good job there.
Thank you.
Then you had Supergirl versus Lex Luthor, which did not happen.
No, we had Lex versus Demon.
Yeah, Lex versus Demon, but you had Supergirl winning there. Then you, moving over to the right, we got Wonder Woman versus Plastic Man. Didn't quite happen that way, but Wonder Woman did move on. Swamp Thing versus Cyborg, that was a matchup, but you had Swamp Thing winning, Cyborg won. Batman obviously is going to be a problem, but Batman, Damian Wayne, you had Damian Wayne winning. That's not what happened there. And Barda versus Harley Quinn, you had Harley Quinn winning, and that also didn't happen there. So big shakeups in Pete's bracket. Pete, anything you want to add on there?
I'm surprised I had... Harley Quinn beating Barda. That doesn't sound like me.
Interesting. Great Barda call fan. On the Aquaman, though.
Yeah.
All right. Now we got maybe Justin's, we're saying. So Superman versus Captain Atom. Is this yours? No.
This is yours.
You had Supergirl winning.
Yes. That's mine. Yep.
Okay. So Superman versus Captain Atom. You had Captain Atom winning. Wrong. Firestorm versus Jay Garrick. You had Jay Garrick winning. Also incorrect. Aquaman versus Hawkman. You had Hawkman winning. Incorrect. Black Lightning versus Supergirl. Supergirl did not move on. Wonder Woman versus Lobo. You got Wonder Woman. You got one there. You're good. Nailed Swamp it. Thing versus Batwoman. You had Batwoman. Nope. Batman versus Red Hood. You had Red Hood moving on. Also incorrect. Correct. And Barda versus Harley Quinn. Yes. Harley Quinn. So, Justin, any thoughts as we move into the Elite
Eight? I'm busted. My bracket's busted.
Yeah. All right. And then we got mine. I had Superman versus Power Girl. That was incorrect, but Superman did move on. I had Firestorm versus Cheetah. Didn't happen. Firestorm. What actually happened there? Oh, we had Jay Garrick versus Guy Gardner. That's right. So yeah. Firestorm, incorrect. Aquaman versus Hawkman. I had Aquaman, so I got that. Black Lightning versus the Demon. I had Black Lightning, incorrect.
Oof, close.
Wonder Woman versus Lobo. I did correctly choose Wonder Woman. Swamp Thing versus Batwoman. I chose Swamp Thing, incorrect. Batman versus Red Hood. I had Batman moving on. Are we considering Batman the Joker or not really?
No. I don't think that counts. You can't win that.
Yeah. And Barda versus Harley Quinn. I had Barda. And that did not happen at all. So I got Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and Superman. So I think I'm doing the best out of the Elite Eight, right?
Is that true? Pete it had seemed Aquaman.
Like, yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe Pete is doing better.
I think Pete maybe had 3-2.
Yeah. Okay.
And what did I have? One?
Yeah, something like that.
Great.
All right. Well, there we go. We are moving into the next round. We'll see how we're doing. And it's just going to get worse from here, I think.
Yes. Well, when it's a story, it's harder to predict than a game between two teams.
Yes.
And if my bracket stinks, this event is so much fun, I don't even care.
Yeah.
Like, the Joker replacing Batman doesn't happen much in college basketball, you know, where another team kills the other team and takes their places. You know?
Not yet.
Not yet. Good point, Pete.
Yeah. There's no rule that says somebody from a team can't kill another person from another team.
That's right.
Team.
That's something that Duke would do. So.
Yeah. I believe that's how Air Bud got on, is he killed a player, right? He ate his bones.
Definitely.
And now we move from DCKO to the Age of Revelation. It is somehow still continuing, even though, there's sure been a lot of it. We have a bunch of titles this week that we are going to talk through four, in fact. And just to mention, we only got one more week of Age of Revelation. Next week, December 31st, is the final week of this event. Then we've a mixed bag, I guess.
We'll find out what happens, though.
Yeah.
Because none of these books are telling us what happens or even who's
going on. Why
don't
we talk about this one first? Expatriate X-Men number 3 from Marvel, of course, written by Evel Ewing, art by Francesco Mortarino. In this issue, the pirates of the future X-Men are taking on Magic, who is a demon lord with the demon Juggernaut by her side.
Oh, Alex, did you freeze?
I'm done. No, I did not freeze.
Internet must have gone out. You just stopped short.
Did you have a stroke? Are you okay?
I've been a real apologist for this book, particularly because I do like the art from Francesca Bordorino, and I really liked what Evel Ewing was doing over on her X-Men book. I'm really looking forward to X-Men United that's coming out next year. But boy, this was a mess.
Yeah, this one's so confusing. I don't know. It's Dark Child, I think. Magic seems to be dead, and this is the limbo demonic version of her who has taken over. But, like, it's just sort of messy. And I don't know. I know this has been a thing for a while, but I don't understand the pirate ship X-Men connection. It feels strange to me. It was in the Krakoa age. I think that was because it was an island. It made a little bit more sense to have a pirate ship. This just feels, like, random. So I don't quite get that. I don't know what's happening. This crosses over with Undeadpool a little bit, sort of, but I don't know why that either. That also happens. I agree. I was a bit lost in this one. This, I felt like it was a four-issue series that got jammed into three issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that it's hard. First off, I don't like seeing, parents fight. So having kind of like the X-Men fight each other here, even though it's evil versions, is still a little heartbreaking. That being said, the evil Magic and evil Juggernauts are badass looking and kind of fun to watch, but also heartbreaking. Yeah, the whole kind of like, what about your daughter? You know, I am like, what the fuck? It's happening, but it is busy. There is a lot going on. It's just also like next issue Revelation. It's like, when are we gonna get to this guy? You know what I mean? Like, it keeps
next
being like
issue.
next issue, but it's like I'd like to eventually get to the point where I get to see if this dude's scary and worth all this hype or whatever. But I don't know, man. It just feels like it's getting pushed off.
Well, why don't we talk about one of the titles that I know Justin has been liking quite a bit, Cloak or Dagger, number 3, yeah. Written by Justina Ireland, art by Lorenzo Tomeda. This focuses on Cloak or Dagger having to occupy the same body, though the twist at the end of the last issue was they were, in fact, separated, perhaps due in part to their daughter, who has been living inside of Cloak since she was born. Justin, how do you feel about this one? How did this wrap up?
I thought it was great. This is just on the fringe. It's just a great three-issue series on the edge of this crossover where Cloak or Dagger takes on the Fenris twins. And, you know, the innovation here of the or instead of and, I think is just really smart. I like that they have a kid. Their relationship is stable. It's not the endless will they, won't they of most Cloak and Dagger stories. This was just – I want these characters to continue. This is – one of the most successful of the Age of Revelation titles.
Yeah, I agree. This is awesome. Sweet ending. Very kind of touching. Hits you in the feels. Great art. Great action. I like the twists and turns of the story. These two together are just fantastic. So, yeah, I guess I'm just kind of a sucker for Cloak and Dagger just because I'm like, oh, yeah, I used to love Cloak and Dagger. So, yeah.
I like this as well. I thought this wrapped up nicely. I said this with an earlier issue, but having the Fenris twins as the villain is very smart because you have two characters who act like one facing on two characters who are in fact one. So just that basic premise there is good. And like Justin said, it is unfortunate that we keep calling out the best of the series are the ones that don't feel connected to it at all. Like, this takes place in the same world, but it barely matters to what's going on with the overall story of Age of Revelation. And that's maybe why it works, unfortunately. And Deadpool number 3 from Marvel, written by Tim Seeley, art by Carlos Magnil. As you can probably tell from the title, Deadpool is literally dead and dying and a zombie at this point. Cable is trying to take him down, and there's a new character that Deadpool is palling along with. It was a little bit of a twist to them in this issue. What'd you think about the end of this series?
This is another that I thought really worked. I liked the way this had a nice little twist at the end, like you said, Alex, that I thought was great, really fun. Actually did sort of pay off a little bit with using the Age of Revelation to be the grace note at the end of the story. I thought Deadpool got to be a real hero here twice in good ways. Like, just really smartly done. Like, Tim Seeley knew to carve out his own area, just like Cloak or Dagger, and really play in it. And I thought it really worked.
Yeah, T-Seals is doing great stuff here. This was kind of an emotional roller coaster, but a blast here where it's like, you know, you're rooting for Deadpool, but the Z-Evil zombie kind of version is doing bad things. But yeah, this is just... yeah, well done. Great stuff. Yeah, I'm out of ideas.
I just want to give a shout out to one scene in particular where Deadpool is trying to get through one of Cable's time slides, and Cable is trying to stop Deadpool, but at the same time, they have this relationship here, and Deadpool's just having his flesh ripped off him while Cable's like, please, Wade, stop, get out of there. Mm-hmm. And it just really nicely plays on these decades of their relationship, as well as being some super gross art at the same time. And last of this week's Age of Revelation books, we got X-Vengers number 3, written by Jason Liu, art by Sergio Davila. This is about the Avengers team that operates in the Age of Revelation. And once again, this is becoming repetitive, but boy, lots going on in this book.
This one has a lot going on, but I think this worked better than Expatriate X-Men. This felt the most like like Age of Apocalypse story that doesn't necessarily feed into a ton of the main revelation part of the story that we're going to find out the conclusion to next week. But it does like tell a satisfying, tragic story. The X-Virus and stuff, even though we've read probably, what, like 40 issues, I'm like, yes. How does this work exactly? We never really get it. It's just like, it takes mutants and makes them mutantier in some way, and that's what we get here. But I felt sad. Pete, did you cry during this when a character died?
Nope. I tell you what, though, I enjoyed this book. I really think that the Moonstar cap is really awesome. Also, the MODOK taking two shields to the face panel was really fun. I got excited by the cover because I was like, all right, Revelation rips Vision in two here, so we're going to get some Revelation. No, not really. So, but love the art. I thought this issue was enjoyable.
All right, next week, the Revelation ends, but for the time being, let's move on with some other books. With Justice League Unlimited number 14 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Dan Mora. This is a DC KO tie-in, but not at all Fight Month book, as Mr. Terrific is leading a team into hell because Neron has been once again doing his thing and powering up the baddies of the DC universe. Taking advantage of the fact that the entire world is turning into apocalypse. And so Mr. Terrific has this team of time-lost heroes who are slowly dying as they follow him into hell. I think we said this with the last issue. I'm really liking this arc a lot. This is
so much.
I think you've called out, Justin, it's like Exiles. It's a little bit like Suicide Squad. It's just so focused and sad because you're watching these characters die, but really fun, and the stakes are very high as well.
Neron loves juicing up his bros. You know, he loves to keep his gang charged up. Yeah, it's really fun. He's like the guy that parties that makes sure everyone has a Celsius in their hand before you go out, you know?
Yeah.
Really keeping everybody in the game. But yes, I do love this team. I like they go to hell, literally. And it is funny, like, Mark Waid writing this, and Aquaman has to give up his hook hand. People have to give up some of their, like, jewelry. And then it's like, Superman, I'm going to take your sense of hope. I need your sense of hope. Hawkman had to give his bandolier. You have to give up your soul, essentially. And afterwards, Superman's like, ugh, I'm empty inside. I was like, Jesus, expensive for my man to get on the boat.
Yeah.
But I'm joking, but this story is excellent. The Dan Mora art is also excellent. I don't know how he continues to do it week in and week out.
Yeah, I agree with all that. The art especially is just really riveting. It's so awesome. The panel is everything. But tons of action, badass villain. This is great, man. This is a solid Justice League comic, and I'm really enjoying all the twists and turns of this.
Justice League, whoa, weird coincidence, versus Godzilla versus Kong 2, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Brian Buccellato, art by Christian Duce. The heroes of the Justice League are over in the legendary Monsterverse, and this issue, they're trying to figure things out a little bit. They realize there are two Leland Shaws. There's a good Leland Shaw for the Monsterverse, and there's a bad one who comes from the DC Universe.
Classic.
And then they figure out how there are a lot of doubles, but not every double, and some things are the same, but other things are different.
What a nuanced way to explain something equally confusing. Because this, I was like, this reminded me of the Monarch TV show on Apple, set in the Monsters universe, where I was like, wait, what? There's so much bureaucracy being explained. And I was like, aren't these guys just going to fight? But they're like, they're actually in the Hollow Earth, which is a secret cave underneath that's the size of North America where all the monsters just fight sometimes. But everyone's just sort of lurking around, hanging out. It was sort of strange to me. I don't know. And like, we haven't, this is Godzilla again. It's been 2025 has been the year of Godzilla. But I think that means he dies in 1 week.
Don't
he dies
dare.
In one
Don't
week.
Don't you dare.
Yep.
How dare
yep.
you? It's
He's
not
going
true.
Down.
Nope.
He actually does die in 2 weeks, but anyway, we can talk about that
spoilers.
Later.
Spoilers. What the fuck?
No, they've already teased this. Godzilla number 6 from IDW. They're killing Godzilla.
No, you can't. You can't kill Godzilla. We all
die.
Cease to exist if Godzilla dies.
Yeah.
We're all imaginary characters in Godzilla's mind.
That's right.
His nuclear
if
polluted
Godzilla
mind.
If Godzilla goes, the whole Earth goes. Anyways, this is fun, kind of build up for a fight. Love all the monsters, love all the art. This is very cool.
Harley and Ivy, Life and Crimes, number 2 from DC Comics by Erica Henderson. This is giving us the definitive origin of the love story between the two characters. In this issue, they team up for the first time to try to track down the Joker. This takes place in the part of the continuity where Joker was a facist and had no face. It was just kind of hanging on his face. And like I said with the first issue, this is everything that I want out of this title. This is everything that I want out of an Erica Henderson book. It's sweet. It's funny. It's romantic. The action is really good. I love Harley and Ivy when Harry Met Sally style sort of talking over thing, being like, no, that's what happened. No, this is actually how it happened. It's just really adorable and a lovely book.
It's so sweet, and the art is really sweet to match it. I like the the Joker looming over this is really fun, giving them someone to sort of concentrate on as they have the beginnings of their romance. Fantastic.
Yeah, I love this so much. The art has such a great vibe to it. This is a total blast, and I also love the what I think is a face-off reference in this book.
Interesting. And last
he's
but not
an
least.
Anti-fascist.
Yes, he's an anti-fascist. Last but not least, we got Batman Static Beyond number 2 from DC Comics, written by Evan Narcisse, art by Nicholas Draper Ivy. This is taking place with a team up between Batman Beyond and an older version of Static as they face a new threat to both of their cities that is coming along the way. I think one of the big things we lauded the book for last issue, which I will continue to laud it for, is particularly the take on Terry McGinnis. It just looks like straight out of the Batman Beyond cartoon, which is very fun. But there's some good action throughout here as well.
Yeah, this is really enjoyable. Love the line at the end there, towards the end, where it's like, lights out, hero. Yeah, this is a fun team up. Very excited. I love the build to see what's going to happen next. And, yeah, they're doing such a great job of kind of, like, rewarding fans of the TV show and stuff in this. And I feel like it's a fun mix, and the art does such a great job.
Great. There we go. And that is it.
And wait, sorry, real quick on that. I love the universe they have here. I feel like this is such a thoughtfully plotted out story that I think is really showing up how everything is coming into place. It's a very seamless crossover between two different sort of parts of the DC universe.
And for real, there we go. That is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We'd love to chat with you about comics, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah. And Pete, I'll see you when I sneak into your house and shave you over the holiday break.
Yeah. Bring Pete, dude. That reminds me, actually, I got some nutsacks for your car.
Yes, good luck getting past all the booby traps.
Yeah, Pete lives in a Home Alone house.
You're damn right.
All year round.
Find out.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.